back to Egypt now, and the sound here is of the most respected or perhaps most reviled institution in Egypt. You can hear them there, tanks rolling onto the streets of Cairo yesterday. The military has not intervened with the demonstrators, as far as we can tell, and they've been met in some cases by cheering protesters. At the same time, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak has a close relationship with the military. He's a former Air Force chief of staff. He's of military breed, long hailed as a war hero. What card does the military have to play here, and whose side is the military on in this political conflict that seems to be outstripping the political forces inside Egypt as well as the political opposition forces? Joining us now for a closer look at where the army stands is Michael Wahid Hanna, a fellow at the Century Foundation. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And John Alterman, director and senior fellow of the Middle East program at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. John, good morning.
Good morning to you.
John, let me begin. Traditionally, where would you expect the army to play here? To back Mubarak, to back a transition, or to basically crack down?
I think that the assumption everybody had is the army is behind Mubarak, because Mubarak is actually merely the face of the army. He's a general in a suit. But the army is the most dominant institution in Egypt, in many ways the only remaining institution in Egypt, and Mubarak is the face of army rule.
And that's John Alterman, director and senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Michael Wahid Hanna, what do we look for in the next few days as to where the army stands here? Are they dictating to Hosni Mubarak, or are they listening to his orders as to how this plays out?
Well, I would say that they're also listening to the protests. The protesters themselves have clearly seen that the sort of center of gravity of where things go lies with the army. And they've treated them quite differently than they have the security forces attached to the Ministry of the Interior, which are seen as sort of the repressive apparatus of the state. I think the Tunisia model has been in their mind, where the army was the institutor of the transition. They forced the political hand. And so you see this playing out. The army is playing things close to the vest. They seem to, at this point, be backing the government. They haven't turned their guns on the people, but they seem to be buying for time. And buying for time, I think, at this point, seems to be playing into the government's hands.
Well, certainly in Tiananmen Square, the army stayed with the government, and we know what happened there. In Romania, the army actually began the protest itself. It openly deserted the government. What is the scale of the army inside Egypt? How many people are involved in it? As my Algerian driver said this morning, big water, little dam. Is the army up to the task of holding back millions?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, this is over 400,000 people in the Egyptian army. It's not involved in the day-to-day life of Egyptian people. Again, they're not the day-to-day repressive apparatus of the state. There's something in the silent guarantor. They've only been called out to the streets twice, in 1977 and 1986, in defense of the regime when things reached a scale of concern. So at this point, this remains to be seen. Again, what does the army want? Do they see their fortune tied to the Mubarak regime? Or do they see a place for themselves in a transition? They play a strong hand. They're a credible institution within Egyptian society. And perhaps if things continue and protests are not undermined, they might be forced to maybe distance themselves from the Mubarak regime.
But John Alterman, if Mubarak is merely the face of the military, are you trying to say that the military has had some hand in the making of policy or the handling of the country?
About two-thirds of the governors in Egyptian provinces are retired generals, a large number of members of the cabinet, and certainly members of the cabinet who are going to be appointed are generals. A large number of members of the elite business community are retired generals. The new bourgeoisie in Egypt, in many ways, is totally infused with generals, and yes, the generals are the ones who are in control of the economy and in control of the government.
But that argues that even if the Hosni Mubarak regime and all of the members of it leave the country or leave power, that there will not be a substantive change in Egypt in terms of their policies.
Well, I think one of the things that remains very unclear is what are people really asking for? Do people insist on a complete change in the current system, or do people just want Mubarak and his family to go? And as I've looked at the protests and read the signs and looked at the graffiti, what I see is a lot more about Mubarak personally. I know from friends who are active in the Kafaya movement that a lot of it is about the family in particular. There have been some signs saying, you know, the either the regime or the system has to go, depending on how you translate the Arabic word Nizam. I'm not sure there's so much that people insist that the entire system of Egypt change, so much as people say, I need it to work better. I need justice out of this system. And under Mubarak, the system hasn't given me anything that I need.
John Altman is a former member of the planning policy staff at the U.S. Department of State and a former special assistant to Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs, also at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Does Washington wait for the army or actively support the protesters in the street, John Altman?
You know, honestly, it would be extraordinarily hard for the U.S. to actively support the protesters in the streets, not only because of the possibility that Mubarak would pull through, and what would this mean if you have a 30-year ally who you abandoned, but more importantly, how other countries would respond if we abandoned a 30-year ally. The fact is the U.S. has nothing it can do that's decisive right now. And I think given that, the goal is really to do no harm
do
and
no
to
harm.
See how things play out in Cairo. Right.
There's a takeaway from John Alderman. Michael Waheed Hanna, let's bring it back to you. Does the army control large aspects of the Egyptian economy in the sense that, the Chinese military does, and that a shutdown or a protest that involves the military would be disruptive to the Egyptian economy into the future?
Well, one distinction I should make is that The army does not play a major role in day-to-day life, the politics of the country. Hosni Mubarak has made a very concerted effort to diminish their sort of outward political role.
So there's a loyalty in retirement in the sense that people have this camaraderie within the army, but it is not an active institution driving politics in your view.
Well, they're the silent guarantor, and on the economic side, clearly, the regime has sought to curry favor with the army by giving them, very expansive business interests, and that's bought a lot of loyalty. And so, there's a lot to lose for the army in terms of their special relationship with the state.
Well, if they have a card to play, it will be this week that we will see it. Michael Waheed Hanna is a fellow at the Century Foundation in the studio with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And John Altman is director and senior fellow of Middle East Program at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. John, thanks to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll continue our coverage of Egypt all morning long and online as well. If you've missed any of the conversations here about Egypt, about the protests continuing also in Tunisia and Yemen, you can head over to thetakeaway.org. And we want to know, what is your takeaway from the protests? You heard John Altman, do no harm from Washington. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE and give us your reaction or your takeaway from what's going on there.
It's an interesting view, the idea of abandoning a leader. What happened to the Shah, who was an ally of the United States for probably as long or close to as long as Mubarak has been with the U.S.
Yeah, it's all interesting. I'm fascinated anyway. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.